Hare Krishna. So you may be wondering, why am I chanting Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya? Yes? Sorry? You're not wondering. Okay, you've got it all figured out. He's like, this guy is thinking it's Gaur Purnim or something. What's going on here? Thank you, Mother. So, the verse I've chosen is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I already guessed. And I wanted to give a little background to this verse. This is from the Madhya Lila, 22nd chapter. And this is the section where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was instructing. Anyone knows? No? Didn't understand you, I'm sorry. Nope, not Ramananda Roy. We have two guesses for Ramananda Roy. Madhya Lila, 22. Sanatan Goswami, yes. He's instructing Srila Sanatan Goswami. And specifically, chapter 22 is about devotional service in particular. And preceding this verse specifically, Lord Chaitanya explains that Maya is very strong. Anyone here has the experience? Anyone here doesn't know what Maya is? Okay. Anyone here who knows what Maya is? Anyone here who thinks they're in Maya from time to time? Okay. You may know this famous story, Srila Prabhupada. One devotee said, Prabhupada, sometimes I fall into Maya. Srila Prabhupada said, you are always in Maya. Sometimes you may fall into Krishna consciousness. So like that, Maya is very, very heavy. And Srila Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains to Srila Sanatan Goswami that Maya is like darkness and Krishna is like the light. And wherever there is Krishna, there can be no darkness. But he explains that those who are in ignorance, unfortunately, they think that this world is meant for their enjoyment, and therefore they fall into deep Maya. But then Lord Chaitanya gives these nice verses, and I've always found them a deep source of inspiration because I'm always in Maya, and every now and again I might fall into Krishna consciousness. So this is the first verse, and we'll just... Okay, so I guess first, before we begin, I just want to make sure, does everyone here want to get out of Maya? Yeah. Part of us says yes, right? But there's this little part of us that kind of says, well, maybe not, you know, it's kind of, we're a little comfortable here. So this is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says. He says, one is immediately freed from the clutches of Maya if he seriously and sincerely says, my dear Lord, although I have forgotten you for so many long years in the material world, today I am surrendering unto you. I am your sincere and serious servant. Please engage me in your service. Nice prayer, huh? There you go. Now you're all freed from Maya. Hare Bol, Hare Krishna. Yes. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki. So, after that verse, then Lord Chaitanya, or Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, rather, he quotes this verse. Sakradeva prapanayas tasmati yachcha yachate abhayam sarvada tasmai dadami etad ratam mama. That was the wrong meter. I'm stuck in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So this quote is, it is my vow that if one only once seriously surrenders unto me, saying, my dear Lord, from this day I am yours, and prays to me for courage, I shall immediately award courage to that person, and he will always remain safe from that time on. Anyone knows where this is from? Apart from Chaitanya Charitamrita? It's from the Ramayana. So this is was spoken by Lord Shri Ram at a specific point in the Ramayana, in Ram Lila, which was quite powerful when he says this. Anyone knows when this verse was spoken? Yes, Prabhu. That's right. So he spoke this at the point when Vibhishan came. So it's almost like, you could say, almost the climax, you know, of the... That is how we should chant japa. So it is almost like the climax. And this is the scene where Vibhishan, everyone knows who Vibhishan is? Anyone who doesn't know who Vibhishan is? Okay, a few. Very good. So Vibhishan is the brother of Ravana. So he is a Rakshasa. And he is in the family of demoniac species. And in one sense, he's also part of the whole tribulation that's occurred for Lord Ram, because Sita has been kidnapped by Ravana and being held in Lanka. And Lord Ram and his army is made up of monkeys. The entire army is made up of monkeys. And they're on the other side, they're in India, and they're looking across the sea, and they're looking at Lanka, and thinking, how are we going to get there, and what are we going to do once we get there? And I think at this point, Hanuman has already been there, and he's done some reconnaissance, and as well as lighting Lanka on fire, and creating a little disturbance. And anyway, it's the difficulty with speaking on Ramayana is you can talk for 5 hours just one pastime. But basically, Vibhishan tries to give Ravana some more good advice. And this is the challenge, because Ravana is a leader, right? And we're talking about leadership qualities. Ravana is also a leader. Yes, he's the leader of the Rakshasas. And repeatedly he is offered good advice, and repeatedly he can't hear it. And this is one of the primary dysfunctions of good leadership, the inability to hear, the inability to listen. And Vibhishan literally was begging him, just give Sita back and we can avoid everything. I'm sure that Ram will just go back to the forest and we can live here in Lanka and be happy. Just give Sita back. But Ravana says no. Not only does he say no, but he starts to accuse Vibhishan of being a traitor, being a cheater, you know, not understanding, you know, that you're family and you should support me. And he basically disowns him, more or less, kind of banishes him. And Vibhishan just, he's like, what can I do? He can't hear sense. He can't hear. At this point in time, his ego is so massive and so clouded by lust and bad judgment that he just can't hear. So Vibhishan decides, I'm going to go to the other side. And so he goes to visit, to see Lord Ram and his army. But you can imagine, Lord Ram and his army are preparing to go and fight with Ravana and Vibhishan, all these personalities. And all of a sudden, here comes Vibhishan. And Ram is, of course, extremely perturbed, because now he knows Sita's on the other side, being held by Ravana, and he just wants to get Sita back. And here comes Vibhishan. So it's a nice opportunity for you know, a good fight, a good prelude. So it's interesting how Lord Ram deals with this situation. And we're going to discuss that a little bit in more detail in a moment. So but first we're going to ask a question of everyone. So who is a leader? General question. Yes, Mother. Wow, very nice. One who inspires others. Thank you. Perfect questions, perfect answers. Anyone else would like to make an offer? Yes. A good follower, okay, is a good leader. Wow, this is elevated community. Anyone else? One who listens. Okay, that's good, yes. One who listens. Yes, Mother. Everyone. Okay, thank you. God, you all made it so easy. Usually everyone's like, the leader is them. Them. It's us, and many times it's like that, isn't it? The leaders are them, and the rest is us, you know? But actually, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, he's empowered all of us to be leaders because he gave an instruction to everyone that you are meant to become guru. Not just me, not just him, but everybody. Everyone should become guru. And do what, according to Lord Chaitanya? Liberate everyone in this land. So he's expecting everyone to become a leader. Everyone should become, because if you're a guru, then that means you're leading. Now you might think, well, what does that mean? But it means that all of us should actually be taking some responsibility for looking after someone else, right? We're meant to have these three relationships: seniors, peers, and juniors. So all of these relationships, according to Jiva Goswami and Rupa Goswami, need to be there for us to have balance in our spiritual life. So this is, we're all leaders. And leader really is meant to be driven by a moral compass specifically founded on integrity. What does integrity mean? Anyone knows what integrity, in simple terms, what is integrity? Yes, Mother. Okay. Not to give up your values and morals. Okay, due to certain circumstances. Yeah, very nice. Yes, Prabhu. One with heart and actions. Very nice, yes. Not contradictory, yeah. Nice, yeah. In general, integrity means that you walk your... what you say, you do. Often the opposite of it is hypocrisy, that I say one thing and then I do another. But all of the things everyone has said is definitely 100% correct. So some of the qualities of Lord Ram, and there are many, I've actually narrowed this down a little bit, is that he was definitely a team player. And that we'll discuss a bit more in this pastime. But he was into everyone moving together and being together. So he was kind of, you could say, the original team player. And he was able to find talent amongst very diverse groups who even at times doubted themselves. And if we go through the whole Ramayana, we can see that there are many instances of this. Hanuman is also an example, right? When they, at first they wanted Hanuman to, someone said, you can jump over to Lanka, and he doubted that he could do that, right? And then they had to go through a whole situation of encouraging, inspiring, empowering, and reminding him of his immense abilities, so like that. So Lord Ram's a team player. He's also quite an innovator, yes? So it means that he was able to innovate in many different ways. Just to cross over to Lanka was quite innovative, the way they built the bridge, right? So Lord Ram was putting his name on every stone, and each stone was floating. I don't know if anyone has been to Rameshwara. Anyone's been to Rameshwara in South India? Yeah. So if you go to this area, I think it's called Dhanashkodi, then if you go there, then they actually have some floating stones. So you can see, and so like this. Anyway, he was a great innovator, many things that could be said. So we're going to use three specific incidences from the life of Lord Ram about how he empowered others, how he used teamwork, and also his investment in relationships. So the first one is that he empowered others. So Lord Ram didn't stand for belittling behavior. He didn't stand for belittling behavior. Even when that belittling came from his most dear devotee. And how did that manifest? Of course, we know the pastime when some say spider, some say the chipmunk, whatever it was. It's the squirrel, you know, like that. So, you know, when the squirrel was just offering little pebbles, you know, to help build the bridge, and Hanuman said, "Get out of the way. You know, I'm bringing these big boulders, you little squirrel. You know, you're just, you know, what's the point of your little stones?" But, and Lord Ram didn't say, yeah, squirrel, get lost. You know? he chastised Hanuman. He said, "Hanuman, this isn't correct. Just because you can lift big boulders and bring them here to make the offering, and all he can lift is little pebbles, I accept the offering as absolute. It's the same. They're identical. You should offer what you can offer and allow him to offer what he can offer." So in this way, we see that Lord Ram was empowering others because we're not all the same, whether we like it or not. We're just not. Not everyone has the same capacity. But according to the capacity that we have, then we should try to make the most of whatever offering we can make in that way. And we see that the Lord here was able to empower. So empowering leadership means to empower others, discouraging discrimination, encouraging everyone to participate and offer what they can. And this creates an atmosphere of growing and an atmosphere of growth. And this also generates and creates more empowered leaders, because we have to be able to see the potential in others, not focus on the negative, but see the potential. And this is what Vaisheshika Prabhu has glorified through Srila Prabhupada's statement that we have to fan the spark. We have to see that spark of potential and possibility in another person and fan that. Otherwise, often what happens is we can fan the... Yeah, we can fan the negativity, and like the white sheet that has one black spot on it. And instead of looking at all the white, what do we look at? The black spot. So we have to become like the bumblebee and try to find the best qualities and empower and encourage. So this is a quote that I like. A leader of the past was a person who knew how to tell. The leader of the future will be a person who knows how to ask. And I was thinking that what I would say is that the leader of the future knows how to listen. And if you listen, then you know how to ask. You ask appropriately. So like that. So to this pastime, we can see that when Bibhishan comes, Lord Ram could sense that there was some tension amongst the devotees because they were disagreeing. Some of them were saying, "We should kill him. You should just get rid of, you know, Vibhishan. Don't let him in because he's probably a spy," which is quite possible. You know, it's a very good possibility. But then others were saying, no, it's okay. He's come here to surrender. You should accept him. We can use whatever knowledge or information he may offer us. So just like in the Bhagavatam, when King Parikshit first went to the bank of the Ganga to meditate until death, and the sadhus were there, it's described that the sadhus, before Shukadeva Goswami appeared, the sadhus were all giving him differing instructions. So it's not uncommon that amongst the sadhus there will be different opinions. We shouldn't think that everyone's going to always have the same opinion. And Prabhupada addresses this in one wonderful letter to Atreya Rishi Prabhu, where he explains that we're always going to have different leanings toward different things because we are persons, because we're individuals, and therefore we'll think differently. So what did Lord Ram do? You know, he said, you guys are stupid. He said, I don't need your opinion. I'm the leader here. I'll make the decision. Yes? Isn't that what Lord Ram did? He shut them down. I don't need your input. Right? I've got it all figured out myself. I'm God, by the way, in case you didn't know. In case somehow you missed that, you know, scheduled incarnation program, you know. I am God, and guess what? You aren't. You know? Now, unfortunately, or fortunately, Lord Ram is God. Unfortunately, most of us aren't. But sometimes you can get into a position of leadership where you start to think that you are God. You know? So that can be a dangerous situation. No, what Lord Ram did was he said, okay, let's have a huddle. Not a cuddle, but a huddle. You know what a huddle is? Everyone gets together and sits around. So they have these things now, management. 20-minute huddle, okay, that's it. We don't have long meetings. We just have 20 minutes. That's it. All standing up. Point, 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 point. Okay, everyone gets their say. So everyone got to input, and Lord Ram listened to everyone's input. Srila Prabhupada also used to do this regularly. In fact, there's one pastime where Srila Prabhupada was asking devotees, what do you think? And they said, Prabhupada, I don't know. I'm just a new devotee, a neophyte. And Prabhupada said, no, you're chanting 16 rounds. Krishna is in your heart. He can also inspire you. And so Prabhupada was asking for input from his disciples who were minimum, you know, most of them 40 or 50 years his junior in age, what to speak of, you know, the pure devotee descended from the spiritual sky, and then he has these personalities, some of whom, you know, were probably still feeling some residual effects of like their, you know, exciting previous lives, you know. But Prabhupada was listening. I mean, even the whole London Yatra is because Shyam Sundar Prabhu somehow thought, I'll meet the Beatles. I mean, most people must have been saying, he's Cracker Jacks, you know, no chance. And Prabhupada actually even said to Mukunda, do you think it's possible this Shyam Sundar could meet the Beatles? Mukunda said, well, he knows a lot of people, Prabhupada, and he's very determined. Prabhupada said, okay. So then you should all go to London and try to meet the Beatles. So he very much was open and receptive. So what an empowering leader. And then he built an empowered team. And look what happened, because once they came to London, then so many things happened. They did meet the Beatles, then Europe. Then he took them all back to India. He took the dancing white elephants back to India. And then India lit up, and then the rest of the world, so like that. So because Prabhupada was able to hear, otherwise he could have easily said, this is a stupid idea, doesn't make any sense, it's highly unlikely you're going to meet the Beatles, highly unlikely. And even if you do, why are they going to become the, you know, you can easily shoot things down. But somehow he was able to listen. Lord Ram did the same thing. But then Lord Ram made a decision. And what was that decision? To accept Vibhishan. And that's when he made this quote. He said, Vibhishan has come here to surrender to me, and therefore I have to accept him. And then he said, even if Ravana comes here, after all of what he's done to me and all the havoc he's wreaked, even if he comes here and surrenders to me, I'll give him shelter. Jai Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ji Ki Jai Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai Shishi Gorni Tai Ki Jai. So this is the mood of Lord Ram, that he is so merciful and so kind that he's willing to accept someone when they come seriously and sincerely and surrender to them. So like that. Of course, you could say Lord Chaitanya is even more kind. You don't even have to surrender. He's just giving the mercy freely to everyone. But Lord Ram said, I have to accept him. So empowered leadership means that leaders are not in ivory towers. They're with their people and hear from their teams. They build teams of empowered leaders and they allow them a space to speak. Srila Prabhupada used to make this quote, proprietorship turns. Anyone knows this? Proprietorship turns. Sand, but dirt works, I guess. Sounds a little dirtier, but yeah. But proprietorship turns sand into gold. It means when, does everyone understand that? I saw a few of the eyebrows go. That's a very important point. Means empowerment means you give someone trust. And with that trust, you give them responsibility. And when someone has responsibility for something, it can go from being a kind of something to being something very powerful, something very wonderful. So what was just an idea, a bit of sand with Shyam Sundar Prabhu, let's go to London and meet the Beatles. Once Srila Prabhupada got behind it and empowered them to own it, to have proprietorship, for it to be theirs, then the whole thing became like gold. So proprietorship, giving someone ownership and responsibility of something, can turn nothing into something very valuable. Like that. So Srila Prabhupada used to say that. So if the leader or leaders have faith and trust in their team, then they will inspire the same across their entire organization. So like that. So Lord Ram was definitely inspiring leaders. Another quote. Leaders don't create followers. They should create more leaders. So this is a paradigm shift of consciousness. Often we think, you know, you want to be the leader so lots of people are following you. But a real good leader wants to create an army of leaders. And then he can go and chant japa. Or she can go and chant japa. And investment in relationships. So because of trust and faith in the leadership, Lord Ram's army was able to accomplish more than anyone could have imagined. You know, going up against Ravana's army, it was really... So here's Lord Ram. Now, Lord Ram is God, and his brother is also God. But, you know, and they're there. But then their army is comprised wholly and solely of monkeys. Whereas Ravan's army is like rakshasas, you know, like just built to kill, you know, killing machines. And you go into battle with a bunch of monkeys and you're like, well, okay, guys, let's go. Yeah. But he empowered all of them, and he had such a loving relationship. They had such faith in him, and he had faith in them, that they were able to accomplish more. There's a saying that the whole is worth more than the sum of the parts. So 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 = 4. But when you put all four together, if they're all firing on all cylinders, it's worth a lot more than four. Does that make sense? So sometimes the whole is worth more than the sum of the parts. Empowered leadership shows by example and gains trust through loving relationships and personal dealings, and teaches how together everyone achieves more. Right? That's the acronym for team. And that synergy is more powerful than antagonism. So like that. So Lord Ram was definitely invested in building relationships. So like that. Another good team leader. Another quote. Okay, yeah, this is powerful. Leadership is a choice that lies in the space between stimulus and response. I think I talk about this often, that there's a stimulus and then a response. But usually it's not a response, it's a reaction. But we have the choice, and there's this personality, Viktor Frankl, who said, between stimulus and response, there is a space. And in that space is our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and our freedom. So when we say someone is responsible, it means that they're able to respond. And that means they're able to slow things down and not just react, but actually choose the choice that they make. Srila Prabhupada said that a person's greatness can be determined by their ability to tolerate provoking circumstances. So, anyone here has ever been provoked by a circumstance? Maybe you're being provoked right now, like to sit here and continue to listen to me. You might be like, when will it end? Oh, Lord. But the material energy is, anyone here does computer programming? Okay. Anyone here has ever messed with a computer? Okay, yeah. So they're programmed to do certain things. The material energy is programmed in a certain way. It's programmed perfectly to be imperfect. And that means it will never be exactly what we want. As Prabhupada would say, there's always some sand in the sweet rice. You know, eating nice sweet rice and all of a sudden some grit and half your tooth seems to fall out. So the material energy promises the world and doesn't really deliver it. There's always something that's not quite right. So we have to learn how to tolerate. And this is a big discussion, tolerance, because tolerance isn't gritting your teeth. Just one second. Tolerance isn't gritting your teeth and 10 years later saying, I was tolerating for so long. Right? Anyone knows that kind of tolerance? Yeah, we're all tolerating that way. Tolerating, fist-clenching tolerance. But tolerance, real tolerance, means digesting. It means that things don't get hung up here. That it comes in, we find gold in a filthy place, and then we let the rest go. That's tolerance. And then it's like, no, I had to really tolerate that situation, but it means I had to digest it. It wasn't easy to digest, but I got some nourishment out of it. I found something beneficial, and I let the rest go. But most of us find it very difficult to let things go. Like a hot coal, we hold on to it for years. 10 years later, I'm still burning, right? From this, I'm still tolerating. So like that. So we have to make that decision, as the previous quote was saying. So, Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, leadership qualities of Lord Ram. There are many of them. I just tried to cram this into a very quick session. Just a few that are maybe prominent, to also show how much Lord Ram is very much a caring leader. He's very much a caring leader, caring for his whole community so much that he was willing to go to the forest on the order of his father. He gave up everything, sacrificed everything just to go to the forest. And so caring about Sita, he was willing to do whatever to, you know, seek her out, perpetually looking after all of the devotees. So his qualities are unlimited. So Lord Ram is really an exemplar of a caring leader. But we have to remember that we're all meant to be leaders, and we're all meant to be caring leaders. So like that. So I just wanted to take a few minutes at the end. You had your hand raised. Yes, please. Investment in relationship and tolerance. Oh, there's a mic there, I think.
Yeah. So you trust a person, and that's when you invest into a relationship. But if that trust gets broken, let's say 5-6 times, you're still tolerating that the trust is getting broken. Should there be a limit to which we can tolerate, and then what should be the thing? Because what happens is people see, at least in my example, they see that I'm in Krishna consciousness, so they tend to take me for granted. Because, you know, maybe he has a higher tolerance. So should there be a limit?
Nice question. So is there a limit to our tolerance? Well, there's a quote from Jesus, I think. He said we should forgive, 7 times 7 times 7 times, or 21 times 21 times 21 times, or something like that. There's a... What is it? 70 times 7, thank you, yes. That's a lot. Well, I don't know either. But there is a limit, 70 times 7, so you can work that one out. But I think the point is also, though, that we have to be, you know, when we say tolerate, it doesn't mean that you might not necessarily change the situation. If every day you go into work and someone comes and spits in your face and you just keep tolerating, if you're on that platform where it doesn't bother you and you just carry on, but, you know, if like on the 15th day or the 70th time 70th day you pull out a machine gun, and then you really haven't been tolerating. And, so we also have to make a decision of how we can digest something, and that doesn't always mean just becoming a doormat. It's another misnomer that humility means you just necessarily let someone walk all over you. Srila Prabhupada said that Arjuna was the most humble, and he killed innumerable personalities on the battlefield. I'm not encouraging you to kill anyone, just so that's clear. But the point being that humility means, being responsible means that we figure out how to make the best response to that situation. The big challenge is often with communication. And we often don't really know how to communicate. Either we kind of make a joke of something that we really think is serious, or we become, you know, it's fight or flight. Do you understand that term? It means either I fly off the handle, or I just ignore until it explodes. But real communication means the ability to sit down with someone, take responsibility for your part of the scenario, and try to open a dialogue where there can be some resolution. Does that make sense? But that's not easy. Because that's the mode of goodness, right? And ignorance, to ignore the situation, is the mode of ignorance. And to fight is the mode of passion. So goodness is harder, a little more difficult, may take a little bit more time. Does that answer your question? Okay. Mm-hmm. People who are genuinely in the mode of goodness, they can elevate those who are in the mode of ignorance by creating a space for the possibility of goodness. But you will never elevate someone in the mode of ignorance by coming down to the mode of ignorance and acting in the same way. Same. Well.
Mm. Mm. Very difficult to elevate an ignorant person with a lot of goodness. Very difficult. Mm. It's not happening.
They think
you're stupid.
Or they think they're already in the mode of goodness. Sometimes. Yeah, I mean, that's there. And I guess from that perspective, if you encourage them to be a little passionate and get out of the mode of ignorance, but I think the end result is still to try to bring them to goodness or transcendence ultimately, but well, give them prasadam, yeah, like that. Asmataji?
I have a question, Hari Prabhu. I have a question about how to follow in an appropriate way, because we are often, maybe sometimes you're experiencing that, the enforcement is like, you have to do this. And then we feel like we have to do it, and we don't feel inspired to do it. And I would not like to feel uninspired. I'd rather, you know, take responsibility for that thing still and be, you know, very much, you know, take it on board. But it's hard sometimes. So how do you balance that? So you could have like a mental, even like rejection towards that enforcement, and then you're just like, oh, well, I'm not even motivated to do that. How do you solve that?
Yeah, very nice question. And it sounds like it means that the way that you're encouraged to do something doesn't inspire you. Is that basically what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like your boss says, clean up your desk. And you're like, you know. but if the boss comes in and says, oh, please, 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 pretty please, with, you know, cherry on top, you know, because you're such a lovely person, you know, please, will you clean up your desk? Then you'll be like, oh, that's so nice. Yeah, of course. It probably doesn't exactly work like that in general, but I get the point. The point is that the way that something is delivered doesn't land on our heart in an inspirational way, so therefore we don't really become inspired to do it. Yes? Well, yeah, there's several things. One is, the first is, usually we can't dictate how somebody else delivers. And if you try to tell them how to deliver, especially if you're in the workplace, you might find yourself somewhere else. It may not be our position, but it may be our position to learn how I can respond in such a way to this uninspiring request that I actually remain inspired. I don't get stopped from being inspired, because the request may actually be beneficial to me. It's just the way it was delivered, right? So then let me still do it, because I see the gold. And this was Chanakya Pandit. He said, we have to become able to find gold even in a filthy place. We have to become like the bumblebee and see the good and not get disturbed by the wrapper or the packaging it might be in. Does that make sense? And then we don't get stopped. And you could say, yeah, but if I keep doing that, then that person will keep acting a certain way. Well, if God has ordained you to be the person to change that other person, then may all blessings be with you. But generally, it doesn't work like that. So it will be up to that other person to eventually finally see that the way I'm delivering is not the right way. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
We have to take responsibility for ourselves, and that's difficult enough. I was just thinking, as you were talking, that, yeah, being inspired to do things because someone, you know, somehow it came into my mind that, if there are any parents in the room, only a few, you know, I doubt if parents are inspired to wipe the backside of their nasty child's rear end and clean up the mess, you know. It's like, but they took responsibility to do that, and it's part of the program. So we may not always be inspired to do everything, but if we're really Krishna conscious and we see Krishna in everything, maybe even cleaning nappies, then, you know, we can become inspired. But the responsibility for the inspiration does not lie with someone else. It lies within us. Because even the most inspiring person, Krishna went to Duryodhan and tried to inspire him not to fight. But he didn't see. He wasn't inspired at all. In fact, he tried to have Krishna killed. So the inspiration has to come from within us. We have to take responsibility to be inspired. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Maybe not the answer we wanted to hear, but okay. Now I've gone over time. Yes?
I just wanted to add an addition. Like, what about this mentality of guilt? Like, if you sometimes don't do something or you fail to due to some limitation, and then you're like, oh, God, I'm completely failing. Mm-hmm. And then you actually enforce that expectation that you probably, that's probably not inspiring for yourself. So instead of feeling guilty for that, how, what's a, you know, more positive way of looking at things?
Yeah, I mean, guilt is a is an emotion that can also be used for us to make progress, the same as pain. Pain is the biggest inspirer to move away from something that's causing pain. The point is, if you, the unfortunate thing is if you get caught up in guilt and you become, you know, you become morose and just feel like, oh, I'm such a terrible person, why did I do this? Then that's not healthy. But there's nothing wrong with a little bit of feeling back as I did something that I shouldn't have. It can help to propel me to do the right thing. So we just have to be conscientious. Oh, why am I feeling like this? Oh, because I didn't do the right thing. Okay, so let me correct that. Let me figure out how to correct that and do the right thing. Does that make sense? Okay. Seems simple. Okay, so time is up. I did have a little something else I just wanted to share because we were meant to launch this. Is it okay? Who's in charge? Can I just have like 90 seconds? Yeah? Okay, so I'm going to start talking really fast like this. Okay, everyone can still follow me? Yep, good. Okay. So I just wanted to talk quickly about this because it's the eve of Ram Nomi. And some of you keep hearing, a few devotees have said, people keep mentioning you're here to do devotee care. Do you actually care? and I say no, actually. But they brought me here anyway. So anyway, the point is that we've been brought here to try to focus on devotee care. This is an initiative that my wife and I have been working on now for the last couple of years internationally. So we are also traveling and doing this. But here specifically, we have been asked to establish a devotee care office. And what does that mean? It means just like you have a Sankirtan department or you have a deity department, you have the kitchen department, finance department, you know, in any temple, there's all different departments. One thing that's been left out for many years is actually a devotee care department, where there's someone who actually has the idea of thinking, oh, I wonder how the devotees are doing. So I'm not saying that there hasn't been care in the absence of a devotee care department, but you know, what you, you know, put attention on, what's that saying? Where attention, where energy flows. Yeah, where attention goes, energy flows. So like that. So that's the idea. And to that end, there's what we've identified in the first 3 months that we've been here. We did some surveys for residents, we did surveys for staff, we did surveys for leaders, just to try to ascertain what is the need. And thank you to those who responded, and thank you to those who didn't. Like that, you know, thank you. So it's I'm trying to get it in 90 seconds, so just give me a quick second. I'm already over by 30 seconds, I think. So there's internal for the temple, and there's external. And the internal means that the temple is responsible for the residents, clearly. They are the dependents here in the temple. Also responsible for devotees who work for the temple, so like that. And then, of course, the leadership. So these are the three areas internally that the Devotee Care Office will be trying to focus on initially in the first several months. Externally, there's a huge community. Especially with senior devotees, elderly devotees, Prabhupada disciples. There's something in the region probably of around 70 Prabhupada disciples in your community here. We were just in New Vrindavan, they have 150. Then we went to Alachua, they have 250 Prabhupada disciples. So it's a global occurrence that we have these senior devotees who are now most of them over the age of 70. Anyone here over 70? Mataji, you already told us your age. So, yes, Prabhuji back there. So, and we see Prayojan Prabhu, you know, it's mobility is not so easy once you get over 70 for most people. So there's a lot of extra energy that needs to be put into that. So we're also working with an external team of devotees that have been in place for a little while to try to organize things externally. This is the vision created by the leaders of Bhaktivedanta Manor, that they want Bhaktivedanta Manor to become a beacon of devotee care for the UK and the world. And the whole world. And I think the scope and possibility is absolutely there. It just means we need to put some energy into it. But that means everyone should feel cared for. So if anyone is interested, you can contact us here, devoteecare@krishnatemple.com. Because we don't care, we probably won't respond. But you can still write if you like. Just kidding. Also, we've initiated some social media things. There's not so much there at the moment, but we will be increasing that. So for educational purposes, not just for fun and laughs like that. So that's it. Devotee Care Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.